Welcome back to Bubble Trouble, conversations between myself, Will Page, the economist, and the independent analyst, Richard Kramer, where we trade on your pain. That is, we try and understand why these financial markets keep on getting themselves back into bubble trouble. When will we ever learn? Will we ever get fooled again? And this week, we're going to be reviewing some recent evidence. We know that last week's show about Reddit was incredibly popular. We got a lot of feedback on that one. Obviously, the stock has popped. Let's see whether it's going to keep on popping or whether it might turn into a flop. There's a bunch of other stuff to get our teeth into, FTX being one. We'll be back in a moment with more from Bubble Trouble.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Richard, one thing I love about doing this show with you is your illustrative language. And at The Who, I think you came up with the best one. I asked you about a stock, an unnamed stock that had fallen 20%. I said, what does that mean when a stock gets whacked 20%? And the genius of the way that you used that lexicon of yours, you said, a 20% drop in a stock? Let me figure it out for you. You got a head, two arms, and two legs. Which orifice do you wish to lose? That's got to be up there with your best, sir.
Well, you know, it's not often, but actually in these markets, increasingly often that you see these outsized moves. And you have to realize that if someone had just bought the stock, imagine you lost a fifth of the value of an asset in a heartbeat and nothing you could do about it.
Nothing. You have to stand by and watch. Watch that arm or leg get chopped off. Right. So we know that the show on Reddit was a hit. It's well over 13,000 impressions on LinkedIn. A lot of great feedback. Again, the purpose of our show, we make you look smart at dinner parties. And Reddit IPO was an interesting topic to get into there. Stocks popped. I mean, we spent 40 minutes listening to you cast the cynical eye of skepticism about this stock, but it kind of popped. The headlines, at least, were impressive. Have you got mud on your face?
Not at all. Not so fast, Billy Page. Not at all. Now, let us rewind here and talk about some of the things we pointed out in that Reddit podcast. First of all, you had 16 banks in the deal floating $600 million raise for a $6 billion money-losing company, $6 billion market value money-losing company. You had a media frenzy on Reddit only because there are so few IPOs right now. It becomes this cause célèbre, if you will, this focus of the popular media for a hot minute. And remember what I said about the way in which these deals are deeply manipulated. They float only 10% of the company. Most of it is put in the hands of shareholders who pledge heart of hearts that they're going to hang on to those shares and not sell them. So the trade in the stock is actually much less than the total market value of the stock. But you also, in this case, you threw an extra jug of kerosene on the fire because you handed the Redditors, the content moderators of individual pages, including the ones who moderate pages like Wall Street Bets,
that's the
shares
big one
in Reddit, right? And you created a media frenzy around this stock and inspired what was going to always be a speculative mania. Now, what happened with Reddit? It popped 30% in a couple of days.
Big headlines.
And guess what? It then fell 25 or 30% to where now it trades below the first print of last week's IPO price. And coincidentally, and this is the last thing just to throw in here, the CEO and the CFO both sold 500,000 shares worth about $25 million or $30 million bucks. So, you know, obviously they were voting with their feet. In the case of the CFO, she sold about 1/3 of her shares. The CEO has a lot more. But, you know, I would not, as I said in the Reddit IPO podcast, judge any of these deals until you are 6-12 months down the road. You see how the company actually performs as a public company because you get quarterly updates and so forth. And you see whether the market's initial excitement about it is sustained. And that's, I think, a big question, whether this can be something more than Twitter 2.0.
So wait and see, essentially. Wait and see. This is just bubble trouble at the moment. Let's see how it all pans out when the dust settles.
Well, also, the important thing is, if you did not get allocated shares in the IPO and you bought at any time last week after the company started trading, you are now losing money.
I love how you make things so crystal clear. Do you want to
take
chalk and a blackboard and just lay it out there? You are now losing money.
Well, the simple thing is, you know, if you are one of the lucky ones who gets given a Reddit share, let's say it comes to the market at $35 and you get granted one of those shares by the investment banks because you do so much business with them, fine. But when the first trade is at $50 because it's popped, because someone is saying they're willing to buy a share and they didn't get enough or get any in the IPO, then that creates a bit of an artificial price. And if you come after buying above $50, well, you were able to make money for a couple of days, but now that stock is below that $50 threshold.
It's a nice reminder of the theory of the auction, which is sucker's curse. The winner of an auction is a sucker.
Absolutely.
Because nobody was willing to pay as much as that person. So just, we don't have smoke signals, not to offer any spoilers in part two. We don't have any smoke signals in this show. But maybe it's time to give our audience who listen to the Reddit podcast a quick smoke signal of what to look out for in the future. Is it like 3-month, 6-month cutoffs we need to be aware of? Is there cyclical events that we need to be concerned about? If you're trying to track this stock which popped and then dropped, what are the calendar points we should be considering in the future?
So Reddit is completely irrelevant to almost anything that happens in the market. It's a
let's
tiny
make this
market
answer
cap
universal
company.
To all IPOs.
And even IPOs generally, they are a tiny fraction of the real trade in the market. There's two big smoke signals every listener needs to be aware of right now. First of all, for the consumer, personal interest payments, you know, the credit card debt, or even excluding mortgage interest, it is absolutely skyrocketing thanks to rising interest rates to 3% of personal consumption. And it was 1.6% less than 3 years ago. And it's rising 10 times as fast as it did in 2008. So we have this really dangerous situation right now that consumers are effectively fighting inflation by taking on debt.
Oh dear.
And we have inflation with record high interest rates on credit cards and auto loans, and it's piling up. And now the real question is, are you going to see mass defaults? Are people going to see further inflation in their assets, which allow them to pay off those debts? How is that going to get unwound? Because we have burned through all of that lovely COVID surplus. We had that fat reserve we built up when we were all hibernating for a year.
It's a hamster wheel you can't get off.
It's bad. The other thing that I think people need to be very cognizant of, especially when we're contrasting this stock market mania with the real economy and this personal debt, for example, that we just mentioned, is we have stock markets literally at all-time highs around the world, the UK, the US, Japan, etc. But business failures and bankruptcies equally are on a pace we haven't seen since 2009. I mean, do things feel good for consumers and ordinary citizens in Germany right now? No, not at all. The UK? No. I mean, stagnation is basically the new norm. And really around the world, only the US economy is chugging along, but it's chugging along on a mountain of debt. So I'd be very cautious about that decoupling of the all-time highs in the markets and the frenzy for not just the Magnificent Seven stocks, but some of the other names, and contrast that with how tough it's looking in the real economy. And I don't know how long that decoupling can be sustained.
Now, I want to switch lanes very quickly here, because I could ask you whether you would dump Reddit, but that doesn't rhyme. So let me think of a stock that's been in the news recently that does rhyme. Would you dump Trump? That is, I also noticed quite a lot of headlines about Donald Trump's social website and app. Just seems to be making a lot of money. It might be able to pay off his bills. Yeah. But walk me through that. I mean, not just Donald Trump, I get that, but what is this app? How do the network effects work? And is there any real value to it, or is that another case of bubble trouble?
Well, you know, I really have no idea. I have not followed this back vehicle that was acquiring the assets that Trump is contributing to it.
Well, you're telling me that you're not the equivalent of a Redditor on the Donald Trump social networking platform?
I am not. I can't spend too much time. Reddit, to its credit, is a real business that loses $140 million and $800 million of sales and has some relevance in tech. But if you remember back to our SPAC pod, the way I define SPACs.
Whack the SPACs.
Which was, give me money for an idea I might have in the future, right? It was a giant cash grab in 2021 of piling up all these vehicles to go out and acquire special purpose acquisition companies, acquire ideas, or to bring ideas in and have the money to realize them. Now, what are we buying here with this Donald Trump SPAC? We're buying a promise to develop technology that will support a bunch of social media properties behind this brand. And if you look at the history of the disruptors, the killers that were supposed to come in, for example, after Elon Musk did his number on Twitter, we were waiting for Mastodon and Post and all these other Twitter killers. Where are they all today? None of them have scaled. And let's talk about, I have to ask you about this. Let's talk about the 90% down round for your very favorite pandemic app, Cameo. What happened to Cameo that it's raising money at 90% less than its previous valuation? So I think the market is slowly losing patience with these ideas of buying into these vehicles that are supposed to develop something in the future and giving them that blank check. And frankly, look, I don't know where this acquisition company that's buying the Trump assets is going to take it, whether they will have any real tech developed or build a real business off of it. Right now, I don't think it matters. I think they're selling pipe dream and people are trading it as a speculative vehicle, not as a hard asset.
So yeah, just a very quick comment on that, which is I think network effects can allow you to scale up real fast, but they can allow you to scale down real fast too. And with the case of Cameo and Clubhouse, if the network effects aren't there, you sink real fast, down 90%, which is when your stock price falls 80%, then it halves, as you famously put it. Now, I think we have to introduce to part one of the show a new section called Who Got Whacked? And this week, who got whacked?
There's always somebody.
Well, I mean, it just feel like Sam Bankman-Fried, man. That guy got whacked. So let's dig into this, unpack this for me. Like, I think the audience deserves to hear the Richard Kramer interpretation of events, how it all got started, where it got to. But also, now he's going into the slammer for a good part of 20, 30 years of his life. Have we learned our lesson? Or, when I see that Bitcoin is now trading at 68,388, are we not learning any lessons? Like, at the same time as this guy's going to jail, Bitcoin is at an all-time high. I'm struggling to bifurcate the situation here, which is on one side, we took a stupid pill, everyone got a bit crazy, guy goes to jail, won't do that again. On another side, we're more excited than ever by doing the same mistake again. Won't get fooled again. Please tell me we won't get fooled again.
Okay, on that long intro, I want to walk you through why I'm both a crypto skeptic and a crypto realist.
Kick it.
The crypto skeptic in me says, we know that the principal use case of crypto is to buy large quantities of drugs or illegal arms or people trafficking or all this horrible stuff. And that it is effectively an ideal means of transacting for criminals. And that to me is the core of the skeptic's argument that, you know, eventually a lot of the trade in crypto, and we've already had it well established that the total value of crypto assets, only about 10% of real money is staked behind that. So there's obviously some bubbles and inflation there. But the skeptic in me says a lot of this is being used for criminality, for ransomware, what have you. That won't last. The crypto realist in me says, I understand the lack of faith in central banks and central bank governors to manage the economy, borrow money, keep inflation under control, et cetera, I realized the reasons to be skeptical about sovereign currencies and hence maybe be a bit more realistic that crypto is a different asset class that a lot of people want to participate in. It's been, as we said with Reddit, heavily marketed and hyped to the general public. Not that they'll understand the math behind it, but they'll believe it's an alternative to a system which isn't helping them. So I'm realistic that it's going to attract a lot of people. Now, with SBF, it's fairly simple. Play back the Fastopod, right? When Andy Fasto, a former CFO of Enron, the former number eight company in the US, said, look, it's not whether or not you broke the law, but whether you misled people. And hence, why Sam Bankman-Fried is going to jail is because he misled people. He defrauded investors. He told them he was doing one thing, and it turned out that he was doing something else.
So I heard that some very famous financial portals knew about this Sam Bankman-Fried story 6 months in advance of the collapse, but they were nervous to report it because it would upset the advertisers. And that gets quite into a murky territory of who knew and when this ship was going to go down. When did you know this ship was going to go down? Were you ahead of the curve in spotting the downfall of Sam Bankman-Fried?
I was not, but that's only because in my normal course of business and where I spend all of my time looking at the financial markets, I'm looking mostly at listed large tech companies, not crypto. So I wasn't one of those very adept journalists who figured this out a long time before SBF got into trouble. And of course, by the time Michael Lewis had probably dusted off his book, his hagiography of Sam Bankman-Fried, which, as you know from your own experience, takes a year before it sees publication, I think by the time Michael Lewis had penned the last chapter and handed it to the publisher, people already knew something was going terribly wrong here. And a year later, when Michael Lewis's book comes out, it sounds incredibly tone deaf because it is kind of presenting this boy wonder as if he's discovered the new alchemy in the financial markets, whilst clearly when the book came out, everything was collapsing around him.
You're right to flag Andy Fastow's pod. And for new listeners, this is our 100th episode with Andy Fastow, the former CFO of Enron. First time he's ever given a podcast interview, an honor for us to interview him. But everybody was involved in Enron, hence the hush of silence that something was wrong. And I just wonder who else was in on Sam Bankman-Fried's Ponzi scheme before it went under. I think that's where it gets a little bit dark and murky. But let's wrap it up for part one. We've got some travels to cover in part two. Back in part two with more Bubble Trouble.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to part two of Bubble Trouble with myself, Richard Kramer, the independent analyst, and the economist and musicologist, Will Page. And Will, I want to go down the rabbit hole and ask you about your experience in South by Southwest, especially about this creator economy bubble, which seems to have gotten to trouble. Now, 2 years ago, you came back from South by Southwest and you were gobsmacked about this NFT thing. And we had one of our most popular podcasts ever about NFTs are not for me, which, you know, turned out to be incredibly prescient because that whole NFT, Bored Ape, yada, yada, all collapsed into a heap of nothingness. Now,
it wasn't just that, Richard. It was football agents, it was financial markets. When you explained wash trades, you pulled the blinds back on so much in society where people ladder up prices where there's no real value.
Absolutely. But did you find any NFT queues or metaverse demos sexing it up in Austin, Texas this year?
I didn't wear a headset.
You didn't wear a headset?
Nope, I didn't put a clunky headset on at all. I did hear some people say Web3, but Web3 was tended to be seen as a conversation stopper. That is, if you introduce yourself at the dinner table as I'm working on Web3 technologies, people moved away from you now, as opposed to moving closer. They moved away. It's like, I ain't sitting next to that douchebag. So yeah, it's definitely past tense now, that whole riff.
So no one showed you a single token on their phone?
No, nobody showed me a single token on their phone.
Meg the Stallion's private parts. They have a single NFT on it.
No tokens. Tokens for beers, but no tokens for NFTs.
Okay. So what were the highlights of, what was the mood in this, conference of creativity, which just from what I saw coming out of it, wasn't a lot of creative stuff there.
No, Meghan Markle was there, so let's just give her a juice.
Please.
Come on. Lady's been through a lot. I got a gold, silver, bronze to take you through. The gold and silver are good conversational fodder. The bronze is going to be a very interesting one for bubble trouble. But in gold, I found Jane Fonda just remarkable. The way she tore apart climate change skeptics, the lobbyists, how they employed the same people who work for tobacco lobbyist firms. Just incredible. Silver, perhaps more relevant to this podcast, was Dr. Lisa Su, from AMD. And just to understand the role of the chip maker, and maybe if I could toss you a quick question on this. We hear about NVIDIA a lot. In fact, NVIDIA's stock just went on the skids this week. We don't hear much about the other big players in this market. And AMD is possibly number two here. Is there a Wall Street mentality of a winner takes all in a market which should actually accommodate more than one winner? Like, does that whole chip war going on out there encompass more than one monopolist player like NVIDIA? Is there room for others? Are we underestimating the power of AMD?
So as you as an economist should certainly appreciate that and while you say NVIDIA stock hit the skids, well, it's up 250% this year or something crazy like that. So if it falls 20%, well, you know what? You've still got locked in a huge gain if you sell. So don't look at the week-to-week trading. If you step back and look at NVIDIA stock price, it's been absolutely parabolic. But bear in mind, the reason the stock price goes parabolic is because people believe that this company, which really most companies have a finite capacity to produce anything, content, industrial products, whatever, they have finite capacity. And they believe that there's such a frenzy to get their chipsets that they have pricing power. Now, the more that the price of NVIDIA chipsets go up, the more relatively interesting their competitors' products might be, even if they're marginally less efficient.
That's just classic economics. That's price equals marginal cost.
Exactly. So
you sell a pizza for $6, it costs you $5. I'll sell a pizza for $5.50, it costs me $5, and I'll steal your market share.
Well, and everybody has looked at the technological lead that NVIDIA has in AI chips, but said, you know what, there's some things we can do as well, maybe if not better, but just as well, but we might be able to do it for a cheaper price. Or there are a lot of startups out there, as well as the larger companies, that say we have a different approach to NVIDIA. And if you don't want to get locked into this one monopolist where prices are rising quickly, you might look for an alternative source. And that, I think, it's absolutely the case that Wall Street and NVIDIA has not been the only traumatic stock performer this year, because AMD and lots of other AI related names have performed very well. But Wall Street will look across a theme and they'll buy all the companies that have exposure to that space. And then some on Wall Street will either not own or look to short the companies that are left out of that trade. So I think, there's plenty of room for multiple chip makers to perform well. The memory guys are performing well, SK Hynix or Micron, because they're seen as a critical component of those data centers that handle all the AI that NVIDIA chips are processing. And then there's networking companies that are doing well because you have to get the data in and out of those data centers. So
you got a rising tide lifts all boats.
Absolutely. And then the question will be, if all of that economic creation happens within the data centers, where is it drawing from? Because in a world of global 2 or 3% GDP growth, if one sector of the economy is growing 5 or 10, then something else has to be on the other side of that trade falling to compensate for it.
I hear it. And one student professor observation about AMD, well, firstly, Dr. Lisa Su was potentially the most impressive leader I've ever seen in my life. I'll just lay that on the record. Incredible CEO. But secondly, the focus on how AMD are working with film companies. They brought on stage a guy who won the Oscar literally 12 hours before and flew to Austin to be on stage with her. It just made me think about the use case if AMD is doubling down on its integration with the film movie makers, and in 2 years' time there's a blockbuster movie where everyone's talking about A, the film, and B, AMD, the chip maker. That's a great use case. A B, amazing promotion.
Well, I don't think they'll be talking about the chip maker when they talk about the film. And you might have seen
this.
It
felt like it was getting close. It really did. The way this director talked about.
You might have seen the OpenAI demo of a video image generator called Sora.
Yeah.
Which the CTO, the chief technology officer of OpenAI, was unable to explain what data Sora had been trained on, where they stole. And that was an almost comical interview which she gave with the Wall Street Journal, which was humiliating. It was embarrassingly bad. But the point is that it's a long road until you can get an AI system to do the equivalent of a Hollywood movie. But along the way, there are many little incremental innovations you can bring to bear, which make it more efficient or streamline the process. But I don't think you're going to be having AI directed movies in the near term. I think it's a long road to get there.
Maybe not as long as you think, but whatever that road is, I do believe that the chip makers will be part of the dialogue with the general public. Now,
and what's fascinating here, let me just say one of the fascinating things, the only technology company that has ever branded a tertiary product, like a product that goes into another product, has been Intel, and they did Intel Inside for many years. Now you have Qualcomm with Snapdragon trying to brand that with shirt sponsorship deals. And I think you'll see NVIDIA, you'll see others, the chip makers will try to become brands, even though they are tertiary products that consumers never buy themselves. They only buy products that contain them. And they'll differentiate their products based on that they contain an AMD, NVIDIA, Qualcomm, or another chipset, but based on the brands of those chipsets. Very unusual trend.
Yeah, companies that really should be behind the curtain coming to the front of the stage, like NVIDIA sponsoring sports clubs could be a realistic thing next season, you know?
Now, okay, you're giving your bronze because I've got a big question for you about South by Southwest.
So bronze was Jack Conte, the CEO and founder of Patreon. You know that you're a big believer in the creator economy. I mean, how many buskers have you tipped with your credit card this week? He came up on stage as a founder of Patreon. Patreon, a hugely successful, you know, subscription to creator economy business model, and said the follower's debt. Basically, a lot of the metrics which got the creator economy to where it's got to ain't going to get us any further forward. So this is the pioneer of the creator economy saying we may have climbed our highest mountain. We need a rethink if we're going to climb anything higher. And Richard, this sits with something bigger, which is the death of human editorial in the world of media. Basically, the machines have won. The algorithms have won. And followers, subscribers, likes, these types of signals, they're noisy. They ain't going to help you with your 1,000 true fans make a living anymore. So he was calling for a rethink, which is many ways testimony to your work, because 2 years earlier, you were on this podcast saying this creator economy is going to need a rethink. So,
well, I guess I got two questions for you on this. The first one is, aren't we just talking about, back to Walter Benjamin, Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction in the 40s or whenever he wrote that, aren't we just talking about the fact that we have, through all these amazing tech tools, and we've had several pods on AI music, enabled far more creators than there is money to feed their mouths.
Yeah, more money, but way more mouths to feed. And the arithmetic is nasty.
Right. So that was one of your lessons to me that made me so skeptical about the creator economy is that, you know, look, I just don't have an endless stack of fivers to throw towards every track I listen to on a music service that I think is kind of good. And yeah. It's not my normal behavior to throw fivers out willy-nilly every time I hear a dope new producer who's got 1,300 listens on a music service. And I guess the second thing about this is
if I can quickly chime in on that, that point there is really interesting to dig into. And the misconception of what loyalty means is a really deep issue. Like the data scientist will look at a spike on a dashboard and say, that's loyalty. Or the classification of a customer and say, that's a loyal customer. And I always quote the Joe Cofield joke from the Edinburgh Festival, where she goes to a supermarket to get her groceries, you know, whatever, Pringles, cereal, whatever. She goes to the counter, she hands out a card to pay for it, and then she hands out a loyalty card for a supermarket. And just before the person serving her was about to give the discount, she realizes loyalty card doesn't apply to her supermarket. She got the wrong supermarket. The point being, we all shop at lots of supermarkets. We're all loyal to lots of supermarkets because we have loyalty cards to them. That's not loyalty. That's just a card that says you're loyal. And the idea that you're loyal to one particular creator, that's dumb. That's naive.
No, but how do you know, with all the high-minded studies from serious academics about Gaganomics and Lady Gaga and her fans, or Taylor Swift, Swiftonomics, how do you reconcile these outrageous top end of the market cases with that enormous long tail that clearly, you know, as you would have pointed out about your former employer at Spotify, you know, they want to empower 1 million creators to make a living, but right now there's 250,000 of them that are making $1,000 or less on the platform.
I know that long tail is long and it's incredibly skinny. And
yeah.
I just don't think the match rate is there to make this creator economy work. It's too much of an imbalance. Too much on the supply side, too little on the demand side. And you know what happens when that happens to the stock market? The stock gets whacked.
Yeah. So have all those fans of Lady Gaga, those loyal, ardent monsters, as she called them way back when, have they stayed loyal to her? Are the Swifties staying loyal to Taylor Swift?
If you look at ticket sales, absolutely, but that's where the money is. Go fishing where the fish are, baby. People are paying 3 times the annual fee for Spotify to spend 3 hours with Taylor Swift.
Right.
Let's do time is value, value is money.
Right.
3 times to get all the world's music on demand, offline, ad-free.
For a year.
Yeah. 3 years of that to get 3 hours with Taylor. Yeah. Go fishing where the fish are.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing I want to throw out to you, given you were impressed with Jack Conte, who threw his entire business model under the bus, but we've heard for the past 2, 3, 4 years about how amazingly, disruptively, dramatically radical this creator economy is. And it's empowering all this power to the people bubbling up from nowhere, new creators. I saw ads in New York which showed a woman who was broken on TikTok and just won a Grammy. Don't we now all believe we can be stars?
Well, let's root back to part one of the show. Is there something with, this is what's beautiful about Bubble Trouble. You walk on your side of the street, I walk on mine. This powerful belief that you could stick it to the man with the creator economy, is that not kind of similar to the stick it to the man belief in the crypto economy?
Yeah, having just watched this film called Dumb Money about the Wall Street Bets Redditor community going after GameStop and bankrupting a large hedge fund, you know, that's a great narrative. It's just not true most of the time.
And then bringing it back to earth with part one of the show, when you told us last week on the Reddit podcast that Reddit are selling their data to Google to train off.
Yeah, yeah.
You really are sticking it to the man.
Yeah, that's sticking, not how I think.
You're sticking you're it to the men and women who are posting.
You're getting stuck by the man. So I want to ask you one more thing in the vein of South by Southwest, because we also had this giant report, which is straight up your alley, about how brilliantly the music industry is doing from the IFPI, the big industry body that follows all things music, publishing, recorded music, et cetera, country by country, et cetera. But if this music industry is in such good shape, why are Warner and Universal all firing people and Spotify fired a quarter or more of its staff? What's going on? Is music in great shape, or is music kind of only really good for a couple of the likes of Taylor Swift?
Well, I think these companies were overstaffed, to put it mildly, or to use that classic joke, how many people work at Spotify? About half of them. By the way, the origins of that joke date back to the Vatican, apparently. How many people work at the Vatican? Yeah. About half of them. So overstaffed, but also a realization of, I think, two forces. One, as this business grows, a lot of the supply side inputs are surplus to requirements. Do you still need to employ radio pluggers anymore? You have done for 60, 70 years, but to be honest, radio follows Spotify now, so you don't need radio pluggers because you're not going to be plugging onto radio anymore. So that can go. I think the other thing goes back to what I said earlier, which is if human editorial is dying and the machines are winning, the whole process of curation is becoming automated. So in media companies, not just music companies, you're seeing a chunk of headcount getting swiped out there because of that simple factor, which is we're trusting algorithms more and humans less, and that is less labor dependent. So there'll be a bunch of other ingredients in the mix, but I'd ask the audience to focus on those two and see if you can translate that to other parts of the economy as well. Treat it like a microcosm.
Yeah, I guess I'm back to, again, a point we made in part one of the podcast. You know, I hear these apocryphal stories about how brilliantly one or another segment of the economy is doing. And let's take music, for an example, which grew 10% last year. What was that number adjusted for inflation?
All right. So that's a tricky one. If you look at industries and try and adjust them for inflation, I always say that's a fool's game. You can do the math is there if you want, but you don't deflate or disinflate, should I say, aggregate pots of cash because you fail to understand the mechanics of what generate that pots of cash. My favorite example, a quote from the head of Sony Music Sweden in 2016, that was a long time ago. He said, thanks to Spotify, Sony Music Sweden has never been smaller in terms of turnover, in terms of headcount, but never produced so much profits. Right. So just saying, here's an industry, agriculture, farming, food and bev, and just rip inflation out like those dumbass analysts do, I think that's a fool's game. You need to be much more nuanced in your understanding of what's happened in an industry that's ripping inflation off the top line.
Sure, again, and there was nothing in the IFPI report about profitability of the industry, but it was about how quickly it's growing. And I think of growing 10% again in 2023 on top of growing 10% in 2022. And I say, hang on a second, everything went up in price in 2023. Didn't music, since most of the streamers raised their prices, didn't music have some inbuilt inflation built into it, which, I mean, maybe you'd say that didn't have the same impact on their costs, but, you know, how it would impact how the profits get divided.
Yeah, I mean, the price rises will help. If you can increase price and not see a dent in demand, that should power it forward, but also the onboarding of new markets. You got to remember, our world, video streaming world, the party's really only just getting started. Like, right. You know, the International Federation of Phonographic Industries, that is the long-winded title of IFPI, for many years, up until 3 or 4 years, didn't even acknowledge the continent of Africa. It just wasn't in the book. This is an international yearbook, and continents were missing from that yearbook.
Because it's just too damn small.
Well, that, I think, is a bit disrespectful to the continent, and it's incredible.
No, but I mean, in terms of the dollar value of the individual markets, they weren't hitting that top 10, which is all the focus on US, UK, Japan, Germany, et cetera, right?
What matters most is always measured least. And if you're telling me that 10 years ago, Nigeria didn't have a music industry worth counting, I'd call you a douchebag. If you said today, Nigeria doesn't have a music industry worth calculating, I'd call you a double douchebag because it's there. So I think just the onboarding of new markets is what makes music, video, gaming so interesting now. The whole smartphones are changing the world one continent at a time.
Well said. You do have a new section you want to throw out there, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, we did some smoke signals about Reddit and Sam Bankman-Fried, Freed. Thank you for, that's a Freudian slip. Boom.
Yeah.
Rather than do smoke signals in part two, and given we're going into the Easter break and a lot of term time holidays kicking off, I thought a good read would be a good title to wrap it up on. But there it is. You read so much, so quickly. You devour books like I devour bagels. But let's give our audience just a quick 1-2 in terms of what would be a good read if you've got a couple of weeks off and you're at the beach and you got there before the Germans and you've got your pitch up. Take me to the library, Richard. Give us something that a listener of Bubble Trouble would appreciate.
There's a new book by Tom Burgess, an excellent Financial Times and elsewhere independent journalist, called Cuckoo Land, Where the Rich Own the Truth. Now, he wrote an excellent book. I read his last book called
Kleptopia. That's a great book title. That's two great book titles.
Yeah. Kleptopia was an excellent book, but Cuckoo Land is effectively a follow-on from his book Kleptopia, which is how dirty money is conquering the world and all the enablers of money moving around and malevolent ways of extracting cash out of often public entities or public resources. But this Cuckoo Land is really about when the rich are able to either control media or force the media to avoid looking too deeply into them with these aggressive lawsuits. And I know Tom Burgess has been on the receiving end of some of these lawsuits. So that's one on the nonfiction side I'd call out. One of my favorite recent fiction reads has been a book by Hisham Mattar called My Friends. And he's a beautiful writer. 2017, I think he won the Pulitzer Prize or National Book Award for a book called The Return, which I'm just halfway through now. But My Friends was an absolutely beautiful book about Libyan exiles going to university in Scotland in the 80s, and then the lives they led post the Gaddafi world and what they all they went through. But it's an absolutely stunning, beautiful book. Highly recommended. And what are you reading this Easter, Will?
So nonfiction for me. I'm going to tip the audience off with an author that needs no introduction and a listener to the show. Adam Grant, famous organizational psychologist, I would call him, really broke to fame with an incredible tech lecture called Givers and Takers. That is dividing the workforce into two types of personas, those who like to give and help others, those who like to take and build on the pain of others. I thought it just hit home. I knew exactly who I was working with. I knew exactly who I was. So he's got a book out called Hidden Potential, The Science of Achieving Greater Things, came out 3 months ago. And it's beautifully written, the fact-checking, the copy editing, this guy can really write. It's a breeze working your way through it. But B, he teaches you a lot about resilience. And I just think resilience is something that's got lost since the pandemic. You know, that cancel culture here, a competitive victimhood issue there. Mm-hmm. I think thick skin is a quality that's been overlooked a bit. And he kind of brings it back to, what is the value of resilience? You know, what can you achieve beyond what you thought you would set out to do if you were just to focus on resilience? And a really beautiful opening introduction segue to the book as well, the story of a chess team from the Bronx who focused on resilience as opposed to geeking out on mathematical scenarios and won a huge chess competition. So for shedding light on resilience, some much needed light on the word resilience, I give it to Adam Grant. Big shout to him if he's listening.
And one book I went by my favorite bookstop today and tried to buy, but they were sold out because it got such brilliant reviews. And I will read. But
physical media, scarcity, Easter, come on in.
Physical media. And it's called The Anxious Generation by a guy named Jonathan Haidt.
I've heard about this, dude.
He's brilliant, and he is very concerned about social media and childhood. The subtitle of the book is How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. I think from sad personal experience, I can tell you how terribly true that is. And, you know, wherever he's coming from, I want to hear what he has to say about this topic. So, look, there's so many brilliant books being put out right now. I can never keep up with them, all the ones I want to read, but nothing like turning off your phone, digital detox, and curling up with a good book to make our way through the next couple of weeks of Easter holidays.
Agreed. I second that emotion.
And let's wrap up another fantastic Bubble Trouble. Hopefully this has been an interesting format for folks when we jump around a little bit. We'll be back with a couple of topics and some terrific guests coming just after the Easter break. And Will, I know there's lots we have in store in Bubble Trouble, so we'll be seeing you hopefully before the trouble starts again with more bubbles.
Thank you so much. If you're new to Bubble Trouble, we hope you'll follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and please share it on your socials. Bubble Trouble is produced by Eric Newsom, Jesse Baker, and Julia Nett at Magnificent Noise. You can learn more at bubbletroublepodcast.com. Until next time, from my co-host Richard Kramer, I'm Will Page.
Mom.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.